Part 7 Chapter 1 Has it been years, or was it only weeks? Like a mist, like a distant thunderstorm, the past hangs on the horizon. I have been ill a long time, and whenever the fever lessened, the troubled face of my mother was always there. But then came an immense weariness that took away all obdurateness, a waking sleep in which all thoughts were resolved, a feeble surrender to the gentle singing of the blood and the warmth of the sun. The meadows are glowing with the splendor of late summer, just to lie in the grasses. The spears are higher than one's face. They bend over. They are the world. Nothing is here but gentle swaying to the rhythm of the wind. In places where grass alone grows, the wind has a soft humming note, like the sound of a distant scythe. There, where sorrel is, its note is deeper, more somber. One must be still a long time and listen intently to hear it. Then the stillness comes to life. Tiny flies with black, red-spotted wings sit close side by side on the spike of sorrel and rock to and fro with the swaying of the stem. Bumblebees hum like little aeroplanes above the clover, and a ladybird, solitary and persistent, climbs to the topmost limit of a spray of shepherd's purse. An ant reaches my wrist and disappears into the tunnel of my coat sleeve. He is dragging after him a piece of dry grass, much longer than himself. I feel the light scratching on my skin and am unable to decide whether it is the ant or the little piece of grass that traces this exquisitely delicate wake of life down my arm, dissolving every moment in little shudders. But now the wind blows into my sleeve, and I think that the lightest caress of love must be uncouth beside this breath on the skin. Butterflies come eddying along, given up utterly to the wind as though they swam upon it, the white and golden skiffs of the air. They alight upon flowers, and suddenly, when next I lift my eyes, I see two sitting still on my chest, one like a yellow leaf with red spots, the other outspread with violet peacock's eyes on deep velvet brown. Ribbons. Decorations of summer. I breathe very lightly and slowly. Even so, my breath moves their wings, but they stay with me. The bright sky hangs above the grasses, and a dragonfly with whirring wings is poised over my shoe. White Mary's threads, cobwebs, shimmering gossamers float in the air. They hang from the stalks and the leaves. The wind bears them along. They catch on my hands, on my clothes. They spread themselves over my face, my eyes. They cover me up. My body, now even my body, is passing into the meadow. Its boundaries are becoming uncertain. It is no longer a part. The light breaks down its contours, and at the edges it is beginning to be unsure. Above the leather of my shoes rises the breath of the grasses. Into the woolen pores of my clothing presses the odor of the earth. Through my hair blows the moving sky, which is wind. And the blood knocks against the skin. It rises to meet the incoming thing. The nerve ends are erect and quivering. Already I feel the butterfly's feet on my breast, and the tread of the ant echoes in the concave chambers of my veins. Then the wave gathers strength, grows stronger. The last resistance has carried away, and now I am a hill without a name, grass and earth. The noiseless streams of the earth ebb and flow, and my blood flows with them. It is borne along with them, and has part in them all. Through the warm dark of the earth, it is flowing with the meaning of crystals and quartzes. It is in the secret sound of the weight with which drops sink down among the roots and assemble to thin runnels in search of the springs. With them it breaks out again from under the ground. It is in brooks and in rivers, in the glistening banks, in the breath of the sea, and in the moist silver vapor the sun draws up again to the clouds. It circles and circles. It takes ever more and more of me with it, and empties it into the earth and subterranean streams. The chest sinks and collapses. The arms fall away. Slowly and without pain, the body disappears. It is gone. Now only the fabric, only the husks remain. The body has become the trickling of subterranean springs, the talk of the grasses, moving wind, rustling leaf, and silent, resounding sky. The meadow comes nearer. Flowers grow through it. Blossoms sway over it. I have sunk down, forgotten. Poured away under poppies and yellow marsh marigolds, over which butterflies and dragonflies hover. Lightest of movements, gentlest of tremors. Is this the last vibration before the end? Is it only the rocking of the poppy flowers and the grasses? Is it only the trickling among the roots of the trees? But the movement increases. It becomes regular. Passes over into breathing, pulsating. Wave returns upon wave and pours back, back from rivers, trees, leaf, and earth. The cycle begins anew, but now it does not impoverish. It brings ever more in and it stays. It becomes vision, perception, feeling, hands, body. The husks are no longer empty. The earth again laps about my body, released, light and winged. I open my eyes. Where am I? Where was I? Have I been sleeping? The mysterious sense of union is still there. I listen, not daring to move. But it stays, and ever stronger and stronger grows the joy and the lightness, the skimming, radiating. I lie on the grass. The butterflies have gone, and more remote the sorrel rocks to and fro. The ladybird has reached its goal. The gossamers cling to my clothes. The undulation, pulsation remains. It mounts into my chest, to my eyes. I move my hands. What pleasure! I bend my knees. I sit up. My face is wet. And only then do I discover that I am weeping, incontinently weeping, as if all that were now over, gone forever. I still rest a while. Then I get up and walk off toward the cemetery. I have not been there before. Today is the first time since Ludwig's death I have ventured out alone. An old woman goes with me to point out Ludwig's grave. It lies behind a beech hedge and is planted with periwinkle. The earth is still loose and forms a hill against which are leaning a few withered wreaths. The gilt lettering of the inscription has faded already. It is no longer legible. I have been rather afraid to come here. But this stillness is without alarms. The wind blows lightly over the graves. The September sky stands golden beyond the crosses, and in the plane trees a blackbird is singing. Ah, Ludwig, today, for the first time, I have felt something of home and peace, and you are not here. Even now I hardly dare to believe it. I still suspect it is but weakness and weariness. But perhaps it will yield to us some day. We have only to wait, perhaps, and be silent, and it will come to us of itself. Perhaps just these, our bodies and the earth. Perhaps these only have not abandoned us, and perhaps we need do nothing but just listen and follow them. Ah, Ludwig, and there we were searching and searching. We lost our way and fell down. We looked for a purpose, and we tripped over ourselves. We did not find it. And you have gone under. And now, is it to be just a breath of wind over the grasses, a blackbird singing at evening, that rallies us and leads us back home? Can a cloud on the horizon, a tree in summer, have more power than so much will? I do not know, Ludwig. I cannot believe it, for I had given up hope. But it is true that we do not yet know what surrender is. We have not felt its strength. We know only power. But if it should prove a way, Ludwig, what is that to me? Without you. Night is rising up slowly beyond the trees, bringing with it again unrest and melancholy. I stare down at the grave. Footsteps crunch on the gravel. I look up. Georg Rahe. He looks at me with concern and urges me to go home. It's a long while since I saw you, Georg, I say. Where have you been? He makes a vague gesture. I've been trying my hand at a lot of things. Aren't you a soldier then? I ask. No, he answers harshly. Two women in mourning are coming down the path between the plane trees. They have little green watering cans in their hands and begin to water the flowers on an old grave. The perfume of mignonette and wallflowers floats across. Rahe looks up. I thought to find some remnant of comradeship there, Ernst, but it was mere barbarized gang spirit, a thin, ghostly caricature of the war. People who imagined that by stowing away a few dozen rifles they would be able to deliver the fatherland. Hard up, out of work officers who knew nothing better to do with themselves than to be on the spot wherever there was any prospect of trouble. Hobos, permanent tramps who had lost touch with everything and went merely in fear of having to get back into civil life again. The last, toughest clinkers of war. And among them few idealists and a mob of curious young lads out for adventure, hunted, embittered, desperate and mistrusting each other. Yes, and then? He is silent a while and remains staring before him. With sidelong glances, I study his face. He is nervous and haggard. There are dark shadows round his eyes. Then he straightens himself up. Why shouldn't I tell you, Ernst? I've chewed on it long enough, God knows. We had a bit of a fight one day. Against communists, so they said. But then when I saw the dead, some of them still in their old army tunics and military boots, former comrades, then something inside me tore. I cleaned up half a company of Englishmen once with my aeroplane. That didn't worry me at all. War was war. But these dead comrades here in Germany, shot down by their own former comrades. No, not for me, Ernst. I think of Weil and Hale and nod. A chaffinch starts to sing just above us. The sun is descending, more golden. Rahe spits out a shred of tobacco. Yes, and then... Then a bit later, two of our fellows were suddenly missing. They had some scheme for betraying the whereabouts of one of our plants of rifles, so it was said. And without any investigation at all, their own comrades beat them to death with clubs one night in the forest. Fame, they call it. One of the dead men had been a corporal under me at the front. A real gem of a fellow. So then I chucked it. He looks at me. And that's what it has turned into, Ernst. Yes, and to think of those other days. To think with what a will, what a sally we set out in those other days. He flings his cigarette away. Where the hell is it now? Then, after a pause, he says quietly, And how could this other thing ever have come out of that? That's what I'd like to know. We get up and go off down the avenue of plane trees to the exit. The sunlight plays in the leaves and flickers over our faces. Is it all so unreal, these things we have been talking of, and this soft, warm wind of late summer, the blackbirds and the cold breath of memory? And what are you doing now, Georg? I ask. He tops the heads of the thistles with his stick as we walk. I've had a look at most things, Ernst. Professions, ideals, politics. But I don't fit into this show. What does it amount to? Everywhere profiteering, suspicion, indifference, utter selfishness. I feel rather exhausted with walking, so we sit on a seat on the Klosterberg. The spires of the town below shimmer green, the roofs steam, and smoke rises silver from the chimneys. Georg points downward. Like spiders, they lurk there in their offices, their shops, their professions, each one of them ready to suck the other man dry. And then the rest, hanging over each one of them. Families, societies, authorities, laws, the state. One spider's web over another. True, one may call that life if one likes. And a man may even pride himself on crawling about under it his 40 years and more. But I learned at the front that time is not the measure of life. Why should I climb down 40 years? I've been putting all my money for years now on one card, and the stake has always been life. I can't play now for halfpence and small advances. You weren't in the trenches the last year, Georg, I say. Things may have been different with the Air Force, but sometimes for months together we would never see a single man of the enemy. We were just so much cannon fodder. There was no play, I assure you. No bidding and nothing to put into the pool. There was merely waiting till a man stopped his packet at last. I'm not talking of the war at all, Ernst. I'm talking of the youth and the comradeship. Yes, that's all finished, I say. We have lived, as it were, in a hothouse, says Georg meditatively. And now we are old men. But it's as well to be clear about it. I'm not complaining. I'm merely balancing accounts. For me, all roads are shut. There's nothing left but to vegetate. And I don't mean to do that. I mean to be free. Ah, Georg, I reply. What you say only means an end of things. But somewhere, somehow, there must be a beginning for us too. I believe I had a first glimpse of it today. Ludwig knew it, but he was too sick. Georg puts an arm round my shoulder. Yes, yes, I know. You mean just be useful, Ernst? I lean against him. When you say it, it sounds unctuous and hateful. But there must be a comradeship in it somewhere, Georg, though we don't understand it as yet. I should like to tell him something of what I experienced there in the meadow, but I cannot hold it in words. We sit in silence, side by side. Well, what are you going to do now, Georg? I ask after a while. He smiles thoughtfully. I, Ernst? It was damned bad luck I wasn't killed. As things are now, I am merely rather ridiculous. I push his hand away and look at him. I think I'll go off again for a bit first, he reassures me. He toys with his walking stick and looks idly ahead. Do you remember what Giesecke said once? In the asylum up there? He wanted to go to Fleury. Back, you see. He thought that might help him. I nod. He's still up there. Carl went to see him the other day. A light breeze has risen. We look out over the town to the long row of poplars, where, as boys, we used to build tents and play at Red Indians. Georg was always the chief, and I loved him as only boys, we know nothing about it, can love. Our eyes meet. Old Shatterhand, says Georg solemnly, and then he smiles. Vinnetou, I reply. Just as quietly.